Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. A lot of texts in about the piece we just did there with Anya about cooking with hemp, and all the comments are pretty much what you'd expect. I find taters and biscuits go well with cannabis. Has your guest ever been lazy and just spread hash on toast? Philip wants to know. If cannabis gives you the munchies, what do you do when you've eaten all the cannabis food and you're starving? I don't know. But apparently, it's not that kind of cannabis. You don't get stoned eating these kind of things, and it's all legal. She did bring in a drink that was made of hemp that was... It looked like green sludge. I've got to be honest, it looked like green sludge. It wasn't appetizing looking, but apparently it tastes of kiwi. Or that's what the Q man says. But apparently the way he came in today, everything tastes of kiwi. Time to look at stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan DeBurka-Butler joins us once again. Jonathan, good afternoon to you.
How are you doing, John?
Right, Afghanistan we're going to first. And is it soldiers are going AWOL in Afghanistan or in the US?
No, in the US. So yeah. Afghan soldiers get sent over to the United States for training along with, you know, soldiers from lots of different countries. But they seem to have a higher level of going absent without leave. Mm. Is it away without leave or absent without leave? It's AWOL anyway, whatever. And not coming back, or at least not by of their own will. So they've noticed that last year, 13% of the Afghan soldiers that were sent for training went missing. Now, that has doubled since... The average of the 12 years that went before was about 6%, and that in and of itself is about six or seven times more than the average of most foreign soldiers who go to the United States for training. So since 2005, 152 Afghan trainees have gone AWOL. 85 of them have either fled the country successfully, which is probably more worrying, and many of them gone up to Canada. So it's quite a decent return. If you're an Afghan soldier and you're thinking, I might, you know, get out of this, 50% of them have managed to get away or haven't been recovered yet. And I mean, in many ways, you wouldn't blame them given what's going on in Afghanistan.
It's not surprising how dangerous a job it is.
Yeah, it's desperate, really. I mean, just last week, I think 70 security personnel in two separate attacks were killed. And the thing is now that if you actually look at a map, a kind of a heat map or whatever you want to call it, of Afghanistan, and you see where the Taliban actually control the areas of Afghanistan that they control, it's huge. It's huge amounts of Afghanistan that they control. It's about half the country, and a lot of it is right around Kabul. And they're there, and Islamic State are now coming in, and they're in some parts they're actually working together. So even though we've taken our eyes off it, the situation in Afghanistan is getting worse by the day, really.
And presumably a lot of people join the army, the Afghan army, because there's no other employment prospects. But after the training, are they guaranteed a job when they go back?
That's the other thing. And in fact, the people who did this report, I think the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction is what they're called. Funnily enough, it goes as a cigar. But they obviously want to try in the report. You know, there's propaganda in this as well. They want to try and put a bit of the blame on the Afghan government. And they do point that out, that they're not guaranteed to go back into full employment after the training, which would seem, you know, to defeat the purpose of sending them to the United States in the first place.
Yes. Plus, also, as soon as you've joined the army, and if you have so many hostile players outside Kabul, if they enter Kabul... If you or your family are associated with the Afghan army, that mightn't go too well for you.
Indeed.
Right, India we're going to next. And this is a Supreme Court has ruled a judgment on bride legislation.
Yes, so it's the first thing to say about this is that there's two worlds. There's the real world and the legal world when we talk about India. And I don't want that to come across as being patronising, but that's really the way it is. Okay, so I mean, there was legislation passed in 2006 to stop child marriages, and what they mean by that is anybody under the age of 18 or women under the age of 18, I should say. But still. But women between the ages of 18 and 29, 46% of them, it's believed, were child brides. So even since the legislation has come in, we've still got, you know, nearly the majority of women in the country were married before the age of 18. Mm. So the legislation hasn't taken effect. But anyway, an NGO called Independent Thought took a case to the Supreme Court, and they won on Wednesday. And basically what the Supreme Court have said is that sex with a minor under the age of 18 is now to be deemed as rape. There was a loophole which basically said that if you were married, okay, and the bride was over the age of 15, that it wasn't considered rape, but that loophole has now been removed.
My God. But as you say, even though this law has changed now, that isn't necessarily going to change the reality of
exactly.
what's happening.
And that's the point. So it's a nod to the judiciary are basically giving a nod, saying we have to do something about this. But actually, what will be done is another issue. I mean, the victim, shall we say, has to report the crime within a year of it taking place. And if you imagine the pressure that these girls and women are under,
indeed,
it's not going to happen too often.
Yeah, or indeed in many parts of the country, they mightn't even be aware anything illegal
exactly,
has happened.
Exactly.
Right. Malawi, we're going to go to next, and two more these so-called vampire-related deaths.
Yeah, it's a bizarre story. This has been happening since about mid-September, and I haven't for the life of me been able to track down the reason why it started, other than rumours going around the place and people being accused of something that clearly isn't true. It's bizarre, and it's worth saying again, it's people that are being accused of being vampires. 8 people have been lynched so far. So you've got these mobs going around basically saying, oh, he's a vampire, and attack him. Now, the most shocking one happened recently, I think. There was a man suffering from an epilepsy, a 22-year-old man. He was coming back from hospital. From what I could gather from the footage that I saw, which I don't really recommend watching, is that he had an attack. It was outside a school. People in the school kids started absolutely freaking out. They ran out of the school, and then a group of vigilantes, or just young men, took it upon themselves to stone this man to death. Now, it's meant that international organisations, including, you know, the United Nations and the representatives there, have put a travel ban on their representatives around the country, and the situation is very, very dangerous.
Yeah. Is there a history of these kind of beliefs or this kind of activity?
There is, yeah. There would be a history of certainly people believing in witchcraft and this kind of thing in that part of the world. It's interesting because Peter Mutharika, who's the president or the prime minister there, who I think, you know, is internationally recognised. I think he worked for the World Bank for a while. So, you know, he's
been around.
He's been around, shall we say. But he has issued a statement basically saying that if people find what they suspect to be vampires, they should bring them to the police rather than, you know, dishing out their own justice on it. Now, I suppose his hands are tied in one respect.
Yeah, and you have to be political with people who might
believe
that.
You can't just turn around and say they don't exist. But then again, might be worth a try.
Yes. Right, Madagascar. God, this is biblical stuff. Plague is spreading.
Plague in Madagascar. And the first fatality, it came about in late August, we think. A 31-year-old man was visiting the highlands, central highlands in Madagascar. He came back into the city. It was suspected that he had malaria, but he died. And the way that the body was dealt with wasn't dealt with in the right way. So he came into contact with some people. And since then, 800 people have been infected with plague. 74 of them have died in the last 2 months. So there's fear is on a very heightened scale, as you can imagine, in Madagascar. Now, the World Health Organization have gone in and they've basically said plague is curable. If detected in time, the faster we move, the more lives we'll save. So try your best not to panic. But if you have any symptoms, just, you know, get to the nearest hospital. And there's plenty of medical provision there at the moment, from what I gather.
Yeah. Have they managed to ascertain patient zero, so to speak, where he got the plague from?
So the plague has been prevalent in Madagascar for the last few decades, but it usually doesn't happen at this time. But it's usually confined to rural areas, and it usually doesn't happen in this time of the year.
Right, yeah.
So what we suspect happened is that he went into these central highlands, he came back into a more populated area, died, and the people who came into contact with them then subsequently spread it.
That's extraordinary. Mm. Right, Quebec, we're going to now, and a new set of regulations on face covering.
Doesn't sit well with the image we have of Trudeau, to be honest. And in fact, it's his party that brought this in. Now, it should be said, obviously, Trudeau is on a nationwide level, and this is Quebec on the provincial level. But they've brought in a new law which is going to ban people from wearing face coverings, and it obliging citizens to unveil when riding public transit or receiving government services. Now, they haven't specifically said that this is targeting the,
yes,
the,
of course.
The yeah. veils worn by Muslim women. But, of course, it's being taken that way. They've justified it by saying Philippe Couillard, who's the Premier of Quebec, it's worth quoting him because it gives his point of view, I suppose. So we're just saying that for reasons linked to communication, identification and safety, public services should be given and received with an open face. You speak to me, I should see your face and you should see mine. It's as simple as that. And that's his justification for bringing in the law.
Yeah. Is it getting much of a pushback?
It's getting a little bit. It's to be expected that certain NGOs and interest groups are going to take this to a higher level of court and see, does it interfere with the Constitution or the Charter of Freedoms and something else? I can't remember what they call it there. So it is getting a little bit of a pushback. It's seen as a political move. There's provincial elections taking place next year, and it's being seen as trying to curry favour with voters who would support this.
Yeah, and given that it's Trudeau's party, is there any suspicion that they're going to see how it works in Quebec, how it rests in Quebec, and then perhaps extend it to all of Canada?
That's a good question. I have to say I doubt it. Trudeau himself has come out and basically spoken out against it and saying he doesn't think that we should be telling women how to dress. So he doesn't seem to support it. It's an odd one. It's very strange.
Right, Israel we're going to now, and 15 right-wing activists have been arrested. What do we mean by right-wing in that context?
Yeah, so these are Israelis who are members of a group called Lehava Group, and one of them, Benzi Gopstein, the leader, he's been arrested and taken in for questioning. And what we mean in this case is that these are guys who, in this case, were going along to weddings of Israeli women and Arab men, or vice versa, and were protesting at them. So they didn't want intermarriage. So in one case, in August 2014, they staged a rally outside an actual ceremony saying death to Arabs. This was in Tel Aviv. So they've been under the authorities' radars in Israel for quite some time. And last week they went in and arrested them and on charges of extremism, I think.
Right. Okay. Oh, so it's just extremism, because it doesn't sound like, if it's just protests, they haven't intimidated anybody or committed any sort of crime.
The whole point of this is that they have intimidated people. I mean, they've protested. That's one of the things that they've done. But they've also threatened Israeli women who've been going out with Arab men.
Right. Okay.
And said,
yeah,
you know, you need to stop it, or we'll do something to you. So that's, you know, that's the crime here, I suppose.
Yeah, and their particular point of view, is it all pivoted around Arabs and Israelis shouldn't mix?
Well, that's one of their central tenets, I imagine. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's, what is it, 18 to 20% of the population? Probably not many people think of that. 18 to 20% of the population of Israel are Arabs.
Yes.
And I think what's good about this actually is it's, at least slightly, it shows slightly that the authorities do, in some respects, I suppose, stick up for Arabs within the country. Or it might be one side of the story.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for saying that. I'll have to read all the emails when you're long gone in this office.
It might be just a more balanced view of something that we don't often see in the country.
Right, Argentina we're going to go to now. Obviously, the election there has taken place, but this is a story to do with this activist. Their body was found.
Yes, so in fact, at the beginning of August, we spoke about this man, Santiago Maldonado, his 28-year-old activist who was down in Patagonia, sticking up for the Mapuche indigenous people who believe basically that land, which is in fact owned by Benetton, should be owned by them, and they're not being given access to it. Anyway, during the protests that happened on August the 1st, I think it was, he disappeared. He was arrested and he hasn't been seen since. Now, last Sunday, there were midterm elections in Argentina. And about 5 days before those midterm elections happened, the body of a man was discovered in a river near where this particular man went missing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it was, of course, suspected that it was him, and it soon transpired that it was him, in fact. And there was a suspicion that this would affect Macri, the president of Argentina, would affect the results of his party. There was major protests, and you know the way the government handled this particular case has been brought into question and criticised. But it would appear that Macri has done okay. In fact, the results of the election that came out on Sunday show that although he hasn't got a majority in the Senate now, that he hasn't done too badly at all. So it seems that the electorate were able to separate the two things, what Macri's doing in government and obviously this particular case. But it hasn't gone away yet, and it would appear that it will be a problem, inverted commas, in the future for
Macri. Well, could it also be that in Argentina the problems indigenous people might have don't rate very highly on the political agenda
point.
Or the
yeah.
agenda of a lot of voters?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Certainly in next door neighbours, Brazil, if there are anything to go by, that you know, indigenous tribes are friend upon there.
Yeah, really. Ignored really. Right, Georgia we're going to go to finally, and this is an odd one. This is the captain of the Georgia national football team.
Yeah, Guram Kasha, who Irish football fans will know, probably because we had them in our last qualifying group. He's a 30-year-old. He plays for Georgia, obviously, but he also plays in the Netherlands for Vitesse Arnhem, who are in the first division there in the Netherlands. And on October the 15th, he was playing a game and he was asked to wear an armband which had the colours of the...
the rainbow colours.
Yeah, the rainbow colours. Yeah, absolutely.
LGBT rainbow colours.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this was part of a campaign that was being run by the Dutch FA or whatever. And whether he wanted to or not, really, I suppose it was all part of something that he had to get involved in. Pictures of this went back to Georgia. And he's been roundly criticised for taking part in this. Some people have supported him, but others have come out. A journalist basically came out and said Georgia's football fathers should know that Georgian men will boycott the team if LGBT Kasha dares to play in the national team jersey again. And he's come in for some quite harsh criticism. So I think it's indicative of a level of homophobia within the country.
I don't know that much about Georgia, but I kind of get the impression LGBT rights aren't that well advanced there.
They're not very well advanced. There was a survey done by the World Value Survey, and 93% of Georgians said that they would be against the idea of having a gay neighbour.
Crikey. Right, okay, a bit way to go. So, right, what story should we look out for over the next 7 days, John?
Yeah, well, Prince Harry is going to Denmark on the 25th. I've no idea why I included that, but anyway. so there you go. The community of Latin American and Caribbean states are holding their international summit until the 27th of October. And it was announced, something to watch out for in the very distant future, but it was announced on Tuesday that wine output will be down by 8%. It's lowest since 1961. So I'm wondering, will that mean an increase in prices? Maybe something for Friday to chew over.
Oh no, or to slug over. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming
into
us. Jonathan DeBurka Butler there, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.